last the weekend session, we studied the case 84 of Blue Cliff Record, talking about the Vimalakirti Sutra, particularly on non-dualism, non-duality. I think in chapter 9, of Vimalakirti Sutra, it discusses on the non-duality. First of all, 32 bodhisattvas who inquired after Vimalakirti's sickness, one by one, they explain the significance of non-duality. And finally, the Manjushri, as a last turn, explained about non-duality. And Manjushri asked Vimalakirti, "Next is your turn. Please tell us the significance of non-duality." And then in this sutra, the Vimalakirti kept silent. That is his answer. Then this case 84, number 84, deal with this Vimalakirti's silence. So last session, I talked about silence. But in that sutra, it doesn't talk about meaning of silence. It says just silence. That's it. So in the last session, I mentioned a little more about meaning of the silence. What case is like this? Okay. Vimalakirti asked Manjushri, "What is a bodhisattva's entry into the Dharma gate of non-duality?" Manjushri said, "According to what I think, in all things, no words, no speech, no demonstration, and no recognition, to leave behind all questions and answers. This is entering the Dharma gate of non-duality." So the Manjushri mentions, anyway, after discussing, after thinking, after talking about non-duality, inner world, with your mind, with your body, anyway, again and again, finally, what you can do is, you have to go beyond the words, the speech, and etc. Then what's left? That Manjushri mentions here. to leave behind. So he says, according to what I think, in all things, no words, no speech, no demonstration, and no recognition, to leave behind all questions and answers. This is entering the Dharma gate of non-duality. Then the Manjushri asked the Vimalakirti, "We have each already spoken. Now you should tell us, good man, what is a bodhisattva's entry into the Dharma gate of non-duality?" Sudo said, "What did Vimalakirti say?"
he also said, completely exposed. What he mentions, the Sudor is the person who composed the poem to each case of Blue Cliff Record, that Zen Sudor Zen Master. Okay, Sudor said, "What did Bimala Kirti say?" He's talking about his Bimala Kirti's silence. Okay? So silence is nothing to say. Okay? But if you see silence objectively, you can say it is silent. But real silent is just silent, nothing to say. So that's why he says, "What did Vimala Kirti say?" And then he also said, "Completely exposed." Literally, it says, "I've completely seen through." That, but Thomas Crowley mentions, "Completely exposed" means silence is not something you can tell, you can say, you can comment on it objectively, because it is completely exposed. Or it has completely seen through. If you see through completely your life, which is same as other life, okay? There is nothing to touch by you. So, because your life is completely exposed, where? In your territory? No. In the universe. So that is your life, exactly, which is very valuable for us, precious for us. So that's why Sudor said, "What did Bimala Kirti say?" He also said, "Completely exposed." This is explanation of silence by Sudor Zen Master. It's very good explanation. So silence is, in the Buddhist history, I think it is the same as, it is a corresponding to maybe the teaching of impermanence mentioned by Buddha. Impermanence, okay? Or plainly speaking, impermanence is not something you can see objectively. If you see impermanence objectively, you can feel pensive, sadness, and etc. Many kind of ism come up. But it is not something you can see objectively, but you have to taste it directly. At that time, impermanence makes you silent. That's it. Because it is very quiet. Or, plainly speaking, what do you mean impermanence? What do you mean by impermanence? I think impermanence is to reconsider a sense of human body once more again. Okay? This is impermanence, because impermanence is the truth that everything is changing. Changing means nothing to pin down. This is absolute right. And the rest of things is wrong. You cannot say. So Buddhism, Buddha mentions, Buddha's teaching is very interesting. Buddha's teaching doesn't have any particular absolute right teaching, and the rest of his teaching is wrong, nothing to say. Well, many teaching there, in interdependent co-origination, impermanence, egolessness, but whichever topic you pick up and discuss about it, it is not absolute right. And the rest of things is wrong. Yeah, but we always mention what is the Buddhist teaching is. You can depend on. It's pretty hard to say. If you have one thing which is right, then it is easier for us to believe or to follow. For instance, one of the Buddhist school really depends on the Saddhama Pundarika Sutra, and Saddhama Pundarika Sutra is the best teaching in the Buddhism. In Buddhism, rest of the things, rest of the scriptures are wrong. Or rest of the school, Zen school or the Shin school, all wrong. But only Saddhama Pundarika Sutra is right. But if you say so, it's pretty easy for us to believe it. But easy way is not always happy, make you happy, you know. Because you become narrow. Your understanding, your life, your visions becomes very narrow. So I think Buddhism is very vast, so it's very difficult to pin down what is real Buddhist teaching. What is the central teaching is? You say emptiness is central philosophy of Buddhism. Is that true? Yes or not? I don't know. Or egolessness is exactly right teaching you should depend on, and then impermanence and interdependence are all wrong. You cannot say. So I think if you pick up one teaching, egolessness or impermanence, whatever, okay? I think rest of the teaching is completely included. Within one teaching, you pick up. In other words, including rest of the teaching means rest of the teaching becomes the contents of the one teaching, so-called impermanence. So impermanence can be alive backed by egolessness, interdependent coordination, otherwise. Even though you understand the impermanence separate from egolessness or interdependent coordination, it doesn't make sense. So that's why it's very vast. There is nothing to pin down. This is one of the characteristics of Buddhism. Okay? So remember this. So it's very difficult to say what is a Buddhism. But it's vast and it's deep. So the more you practice, the more you study, it's really flavors, wonderful flavor oozes from your effort, your study, your life. Is that clear? So it's very tasty, but it's very difficult to tell to some other people how tasty it is, because it depends on your life. So it's very interesting. That's why I think impermanence is completely nothing to pin down. But if you pick up one life, so-called Karagi's life, all other rest of the life completely included into my life. In other words, all living beings becomes a content of my life. That is so-called Karagi's life. At that time, how can I say? It's pretty difficult to tell about what the Karagiri is. I can talk, but what I have spoken is not exactly hitting the core of my life. No. So here is a the poem
written by the Sudo Zen master. It's a very interesting comment. Okay, he asked about the gate of non-duality. Finally, this is Manjushri asked about the gate of non-duality after 22 bodhisattvas discussed and talked about it, okay? And then Manjushri asked Vimalakiri, next is your turn. And then Vimalakiri leans and falls. He doesn't lean and fall. Okay? Lean and fall means here is a screen, byobu, Japanese byobu, you know, the screen. And then when you lean to the byobu, okay, and then lean against the byobu, okay, or lean against the wall, it's okay, whatever, okay. And then when the byobu falls down, you also falls down. That means what you have leaned against something is very impermanent. If something offers you depends on sense of value, and then sense of value is broken and destroyed by some customs and etc., and then you fall down. You don't know what to do. So that is, so after the 32 bodhisattvas discussing of a non-duality, and then Manjushri asked him, next is your turn, please tell us, means already Manjushri tried to lean against the words of non-duality. Okay, so he asked Manjushri, please talk Vimalakiri. And then the Sudo mentions it is just like a lean and fall. Okay. For instance, words is words. Okay, and words and all forms you can see are impermanent. We always Buddha mentions that is kind of a byobu screen, and then the people always lean against those things. Okay. For example, it seems to me that we always lean against when you breathe, you know, in winter, you can see the steam of no in what you say or breath. You can see the breath, you know, the outside, just like a steam in winter time. And then people say, oh, this is my breath. And then you depend on this breath. Do you understand? Or, I mentioned always, if you put your body and mind in a bathtub in a cold winter, you say immediately, ah, wow. And then you depend on the wow. Completely forgetting the before, you say, wow. What's there? What was there before you say wow or ah? What's going on there? Can't you see? Your body is there. But now your body is your body, but your body doesn't exist alone, separately from a bathtub and winters and all things. So all rest of the all beings are complete contents of your life. Okay? And then you can say, are. That is called oneness, we say. Is that clear? But we are always depends on after a while, okay? That is really, well, what to say, restless, make your life restless, because everything is changing. So whatever you, even though you see the silence exactly in terms of impermanence, constant changing. In other words, if you see silence or truth or Buddhas and gods and God, anything, spirituality, whatever it is, in terms of human senses or dualistic sense, in the bottom, there is always something pensive there. You can't wipe out. That is called dukkha, we say. Okay? Even though you feel happiness from the practice you make, you feel happy by practice of Buddha's teaching, etc. Still, if you see silence or happiness in terms of dualistic sense or usual sense of value, human value, that in the bottom there is always something unsatisfactory. Okay? In poem, in painting, or sports, there is always lack of satisfaction there. But life itself is very happy, because you understand very deeply, you see through anyway human life according to the Buddha's teaching. Okay? I mentioned the other day the poem. This poem is also, once more again, I will read. I translated, so it's not good translation, but this person really feel happy, and how valuable and how sublime human life is, including his life and all other life. Okay, but there is something there. Okay, so thanks to lamentation for pain in the world, I am able to become laughter when one's life is happy. Due to being struck on, being trampled upon, and biting my lips to control my temper, I fully realize how precious it is to be born. So going through negative and positive aspect to human life, he found how sublime human life, how precious his life is. Okay, even if I am intentionally tired of an ugly world, look what the blue sky is, blue sky always. Even if one laughs scornfully at my penniless life, there is something much more beautiful and true, worthy everyone knows. I don't care so much anything else except only love, sincerity, the sun, and a little amount of rain from time to time. In this case, the sun means joyous life, just like becoming a great laughter, okay? And the rain means tears on your face, okay? So we need a joy and also tear. So he says, there is, I don't care so much anything else except only love,
sincerity. Anyway, what you have to do is, you have to deal with this, the sun and the little amount of the rain, with really love, compassion, and sincerity. That's it. Sincerity means your heart. Instead of hating or escaping from it, you have to deal with. So he says, I don't care so much anything else, except only love, sincerity, the sun, and a little amount of rain from time to time. If I have a healthy body and a little piece of bread, I want to walk with smile, in great spirit. So he found how wonderful human life is. Under the condition of little bread, little piece of bread, and a healthy body, I would do my best to work since then. Without complaining anything at all, I always consider things, putting myself in others' place. No matter how hard and heart-rending to live without flinching. If there is someone misfortune, I will help him out anything. If I can forget myself to help out, that will surely makes me delightful. In the morning, the sun rises. I will do my best to live today, I greet it. In the evening, the sun sets. Staring at the evening glow, I want to sit still. With a little dream in my heart, I sleep quietly as a little bird. If there is my own time, I want to spend it reading an old collected poems and meditate it along quietly. Let's find out happiness by ourselves. Let's keep walking ahead today and tomorrow. Within silver tears as pearl and laughter as the sun. Certainly, someday I may quietly see my life with smile as I look back over my past. This is a very beautiful poem. He had seen through many things, positive, negative, but whichever both are necessary for his life. Nothing to waste, nothing to wipe out. So through the experience of those things, he really find how sublime human life, not only his life, including other life, is. And then that realization makes his life really joyous and bright. But in the bottom, okay, on the bottom of his life, through this poem, still there is something disconsolate. Do you understand? Not something hating or dislike and like, and not beyond this one. In the bottom, there is a very deep, disconsolate flavor there. Don't you think so? But in terms of dualistic sense based on impermanence, he sees how wonderful human life is. Then his life becomes silence. But that silence still leaves him, silence still backed by very deep disconsolate flavor in his bottom of his life. Okay? But outside, on the surface, his life is really alive. Okay? So, in order to be free from this, the deep disconsolate flavor of human being, anyway, we have to practice again and again. This is Buddha's teaching. In other words, let's see the silence in terms of not a sense of human value, not sense of common sense or dualistic sense. Let's see this silence in terms of, in the light of egolessness, completely Buddha's teaching, universe. At that time, silence is not something you can express it by poem, by painting, by whatever. But painter, poet, try to express this silence through his poem, through his words, through his material, painting, and but still there is something disconsolate flavor there. So very naturally, painter doesn't like his masterpiece. So again and again, he tried to express what is the truth is. What is the deep meaning of human life? What is the deep meaning of the trees, natures? Anyway, try to express. This is painter's practice forever. But constantly, there is always a disconsolate flavor there, which you cannot do anything. So in order to be free, this is called dukkha, we say, okay? Very deep, unsatisfactory. If you study, if you try to search, investigate who you are, if you practice, if you think, consider who you are, well, obviously you can see this one. Okay? So in order to be free from this deep disconsolate flavor, this lie down in the bottom of the human life, it takes long time, okay, to practice. That is a Buddha's teaching. Constantly. But it's long time is forever. But forever is where is a forever? Eternity. Eternity must be expressed right now, right here. This is Buddha's teaching, particularly Zen teaching is always emphasized right now, right here. You have to manifest this eternity. See through what you can see through really human life, human beings, you know, and really you can see silence in deep sense. At that time, silence is nothing to say, but silence is your body and your mind. Silence means they're pointing out to your life and to others' life, which become contents of your life. Okay? So all are interconnected, interpenetrated. That is single individual your life. So how can you say? If you talk about you picking out one thing, it is already noise. Or talking about the oneness, including all other things like me. Always talking about Buddha's teaching based on the oneness. But this is still noisy. So if you want to know real oneness, nothing to see objectively. So you must be two. You must be one. Exactly. That is an eternity, and also all sentient beings, your life is all sentient beings, and also your life. So through your life, you have to manifest the all sentient beings. What do you mean? This is pretty deep. Okay. So if you see this one, if you taste this flavor, very naturally, your life becomes, you know, alive, little by little. Okay. And then express it, and you can live your life, but still always there is a disconsolate flavor there. That's why the master was asked by Zen monks, what is the message, last message to us? He says, I don't want to die. This is kind of a deep meaning in the bottom. Anyway, there is a disconsolate flavor there. But it doesn't make sense. It does nothing to do for us. Nothing is our business. All you have to do is you have to depend on that. That's it. This is silence or impermanence, and also reconsider a usual sense of human value. Okay. And then you really understand deeply your life, and you can help others. So mastery, most people try to erase and wipe out, you know, sadness and pensive, it's a never, you cannot wipe it out. The more you try, the more you can see the, you know, pensiveness, sadness there. Then completely what you can do is you should deal with the sadness, happiness with patience and your zealousness and deep understanding, wisdom and meditation. And then, in other words, you try to deepen your life experience again and again. Then you can see, you can feel very deep disconsolate flavor. That disconsolate flavor makes your life, anyway, turn at 180 degrees. That's why, very naturally, you can find something joyous.